Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, America's original 12-step radio show. From addiction to recovery, from despair to encouragement, and everything in between. This is real life. And now, Steppin' Out Radio.
Good morning. My name is Alan McDougall, and I'm the host of this radio program, Stepping Out Radio. I'm the program director for the United Steelworkers Emergency Response Team. That job entails is every time we have a fatality, a critical injury in our union, we help the families. And we've noticed over the last three, 4 years, we're seeing a sharp increase in suicides in the workplace and homicides. So we had a more in-depth look at that. And one of the reasons or one of the similarities was we found a lot of the families had problems with substance abuse issues. So I was asked to host this show, and to talk to members of different unions and fellow workers that have come through stories of struggles and have come out the other side successful one day at a time. And I'm very honored to be sitting here in the studio with a friend of mine. His name is Ken. Ken, first of all, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Al. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you're quite welcome. And so Ken's going to share his story about what his life was like in the beginning, what was the catalyst that changed, and what his life is like today. So go ahead, Ken. Thank you.
Okay, Al. I guess I'll begin at the beginning. The first time I ever had a drink was, I think I was around 4 years old, 4.5 years old. My mother and father were having a family party, and I think it was around Christmas time, and they had a little coffee table with a decanter of red wine on it. And I could walk at the time. I vaguely remember seeing the adults going there and pouring themselves a glass of wine. And I remember going over to this decanter and smelling this substance, and I liked the smell of it. And it was a sweet wine. So I picked the decanter up, and I remember taking a swig of wine out of this thing. And I liked the taste. I can still recall my first taste of this red, sweet wine, and it tasted very good. And I guess I drank quite a bit of it, and my grandmother, they eventually caught me doing this. And, they put me to bed, and I guess I was inebriated a little bit, and I fell asleep. That was the first time I ever had a drink. It was 4 years old. And then in around when I reached puberty, 13, 14 years old, I hung around with a couple of guys, and their father was a bootlegger. And we'd go into the basement. He would make his own wine, and we'd go in the basement, and we'd steal wine off of him. So for a couple of years, it was just a matter of having a little drink here and there, whatever. When I got around the age of 16, 17, I was a very shy person, and I just could not ask a girl to dance. Me and a really good friend of mine at that time, we decided to buy some wine. I think it was called Catawba at the time, and another old wine called Zing. And so we would drink this wine before the dances and during the dances, and then we had the nerve to ask girls to dance. So that was the beginning where I started to learn, around 16, 17, that I could solve problems in my life that I couldn't face up to by having a drink. And that continued all throughout my teen years and into my 20s. And in around, I started drinking when I went to university at around the age of 19 or so. And we'd always have a party on the weekends, and that's where I really started to drink. I ended up, alcohol became my higher power, my God, actually. Any problems I had, I would drink. It was my entertainment. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go to dances or ask girls to dance unless I was half in the bag. So I bombed out of university because of alcohol. I never did graduate. I was taking forestry. I loved that field. So I never did get my degree or my diploma from the university. University became a party. It was a party place for me. But I had made contacts in the forestry industry at that time, and these other fellows that didn't drink as much as me, they went on to work in the bush. as supervisors and whatnot. And they, I got, because I had the contacts, I got into that field. I didn't have the real, have the qualifications. I lied about it. And I became a bush foreman. I had a group of cutters and trucks were hauling the wood out of the bush. And I'd have, part of my job was to walk, was to put the roads ahead of the cutters. So you'd walk into this country that people hadn't walked through before, and we'd flag roads. And I used to really love that, enjoy that, that I'd be back 4 or 5 miles off the roads and by myself, and I'd be putting the flagging tape up for the bulldozers to come through and the cutters to make the roads. I was back about 6 miles one time, and I used to really love that and just enjoy that, and I felt very comfortable. I got a panic attack. And with this panic attack, it was just an intense fear, and I thought I was having a heart attack. And I'm back 6 miles in the bush, so I ran out. Now, if you're having a heart attack 6 miles in the bush and you can run, you're not having a heart attack. But anyways, that fear stayed in my mind, and I used alcohol to kill that fear. And what was happening was the alcohol was feeding the panic attacks. It was just like, putting yeast, making bread. Eh? It just kept feeding itself. In around that time, I was working for a major logging company called Abitibi at the time. In around that time, they brought in a counselor to talk about alcoholism. And I remember going to these sessions and not identifying that it was maybe I had the problem with alcohol, but I could sure see it in the cutters and the people that worked in the bush. I could say, that guy's an alcoholic, he's got a drinking problem. Couldn't see it in myself at all, not at all. Eventually, what happened was I did see it, and I went to a treatment center. And this all happened in Thunder Bay. I was working in Thunder Bay at the time, Ontario, Canada. I went to a treatment center, and I spent the 4 weeks there. And I was looking for, a magic pill. It was suggested that I start going to Alcoholics Anonymous in this treatment center. I went to a couple meetings, and I thought, well, I got this under control now. I've been sober a couple of months. So I stopped going. Well, within 3 months, I was back drinking. And that continued for 2 or 3 more years. I was married at the time. I had 3 children. They were very young. I knew I had a problem. So I went back to another treatment center. And this was a 3-week program at the time. And then the fellow who was the director of that program at the time said some things to me that I could identify with. His name was Gene E., very well known in the town of Thunder Bay. I was sitting across from him in his office, and I was pretty well nuts at the time. And he said to me, he says, Kenny, do you want to be nuts? And I said, no, I don't. And then he told me about himself, that he had been at one time in a padded cell in the whole 9 yards, and that he had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous and gotten sober that way. And when he told me that, I got hope. I thought, well, maybe I can do this too. And here's this guy sitting across me, very well dressed in a suit, very well respected in the town. I thought, maybe this could happen to me. So I started attending AA meetings, and I was sober for 10 years at the time. I had a very happy sobriety. I was good. The last 10 years of my sobriety at that time, those 10 years, I stopped going to meetings, and I had a business. I became a workaholic. 12-hour days were short days for me, 7 days a week. I replaced the alcoholism with work is what I did, and I became a workaholic. It took 2 years, and I had moved to another town, another northern town, 600 miles away. Not going to AA meetings. I decided a glass of wine would taste really good when I was barbecuing this steak. And the old thought of that red wine when I was 4 years old, the thought of that taste was still there. So I had a glass of wine. I went and bought a bottle of wine. I had a glass of wine, and the sky didn't fall. Nothing happened. And I continued to do that, but it continued to progress. The one glass turned to two glasses, and then first thing you know, the bottle. And I went right back to where I was before. The panic attacks never did come back, thank God for that. But my life was very unmanageable. I could get jobs. I never got fired. I never got reprimanded because I would either quit before that happened, or I would I quit. That's what I would do. I'd leave, go to. So I jumped around the country working in other jobs. But getting back to this. Drinking the wine with the barbecue, it ended up being that I would drink. I got right back into drinking, hard stuff and beer and all that good stuff. And my wife had seen what I had been like before, so I was a miserable son of a gun. I was not happy. I was cranky. My business was my big concern. That started to fall down. My marriage broke up, and my wife and myself divorced. And my life just, I functioned. I worked. I could make a living. But I wasn't, and there were periods, I went back out drinking for 15 years. That's the long and the short of it. And I could survive, but I wasn't, I'd have periods of sobriety. I could always quit for 2 weeks. I could quit for a month. A couple of times I quit for a year. I'd go to AA for maybe a week or two or whatever, and then I'd figure I got this handled. I got a handle on this thing. I didn't realize that I was actually powerless over my use of alcohol, and that I had no control over how much I was going to. Once I started to drink, I had no idea how much I was going to drink. Anyways, the long and the short of it was 15 years later, I ended up in jail on a criminal charge. I have a criminal record right now. And that's when I gave up. I remember being in jail. I had forgotten what all the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous were. I didn't have a clue, but I knew what the solution was. And all throughout those 15 years, I kept talking about that I was going to go back to AA and quit drinking. But that's all I did. I just talked about it. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't do any action. This time is going to be different. I'll have a couple drinks and it'll be different. I spent 6 days in jail. This was in 2009, during the Christmas time, when I was in there, I was listening to all the people talking, the guys, and they were all guys trying to be macho, and they had the act that they're tough and all this crap. I remember listening to them talk, and they were always blaming somebody else for why they were in jail. And I remember listening to them, and it was all alcohol related or drug related. And the thought came to me, the reason you're in jail, Kenny, is you put yourself here, and it's alcohol-related. So I knew what to do. I made a phone call to back to Thunder Bay, and I got in touch with some people that were in the AA program, and I just gave up fighting. I knew I was coming back. I also, at the time, I was working for a major company, and it was Inco called Inco at the time, and I got a hold of the union steward. It was during the strike of 2009 and 10. I called the union steward up, and I told them the truth, that I was in jail. I had gotten myself into trouble, and he put me on to a fella who's now my sponsor in AA. I get a little choked up when I think of this, because... Anyways, this fella, through the EFA program, he was in the program himself, and he gave me hope. And so I came back to AA, I'm sober now. I've been sober now. It'll be 9 years on the 23rd of December. And my life is just, I can't imagine, I can't explain how the joy and the peace and how comfortable I am in my own skin. And that's pretty well my story. I do service work. I volunteer. I attend at least 3 to 5 meetings a week. My life is good. I heard when I first came back here that stick around till the miracle happens. And the miracle's happened.
That's great, Ken. I congratulate you. And I was going to ask you, you said you work for a company. I noticed that you went to the union for help. You didn't go to the company. Is that correct?
That's right. I went. I had no trust. I didn't want any the company at all to know about this. I had no trust, so I went to the union. Is what I did. Eh?
Wonderful. I know that a lot of our locals have a lot of joint employee assistance programs, and a lot of our members go to the union and get help from that side as well. So. One, I congratulate you on reaching out, and the other one, I really want to thank you for your honesty. It was interesting how you said you blamed everyone else for your circumstances until you came to the fact that it was actually it was you and your responsibility. In the distant closing, you gave some really powerful messages here to the audience, but I was going to ask you, what thoughts or comments, and you can give more than one or two if you like, would you like to leave for the audience that's going to be listening to this radio show?
You know, it's never too late. I was older at the time. I was 60 years old, 59 years old, this time when I sobered up. It's never too late. I'm 70 years old right now as I sit in this chair. It's never too late. There's help out there, all kinds of help, more help than we need. It's never too late at any age.
Okay, thank you. The just one thing I want to revisit, if you don't mind, very briefly, is you became emotional when you talked about the sponsor and the person at the union. What did he do? What caused that emotion to come in today, if I may ask this?
Well, I had hurt everybody in my family, is what I had done. And they had just basically disowned me. I was all by myself. And when I asked this fella, when I started telling this fella my story, he told me about himself. And he is in the AA program also, been sober many, 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 many years. And when he did this, he told me about himself and where he was at. I got hope, is what I got.
Okay.
And I knew I wasn't alone. You know, none of us are alone unless we choose to be, and so he gave me hope.
Wonderful. I can relate to that, if I may. My first AA meeting, I was very unhappy being there, and of course, and didn't want anyone to know me. And there was a gentleman spoke up. I remember this like it was yesterday, and it's been quite a few years ago. He said, "Hi, everyone. My name is Mike," and he didn't even know me. He didn't know me. No reason to say this, but he was just speaking his truth, and he said, "Hi, everyone, my name is Mike," and he said, "If I continue this program for two more weeks, I will have 4 years of continued sobriety." And you know, Ken, I took those words figuratively and physically out of the air and put them into my heart, because that was my first message at the age of 37, that there was hope. So I think that's the common word here between this interview today, coming from you and coming from me, is there's hope out there. Never give up, and I really want to take this time to thank you for your time and for your insights and your wisdom. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah, no, thank you. My pleasure.